Hey everyone, I'm Sam.
And I'm Sean.
And this is Key to the Case. Welcome back. Thank you all for tuning in. And thank you to our listener, Pete, for suggesting we cover today's case. It's a case where at first glance, it seemed there wasn't much information available. But once I dug deeper, I realized there's far more to it than meets the eye. So let's get into it. Stephen Spina was 36 years old at the time of his murder in 2007. Stephen, one of five children, grew up in the village of Mamaroneck in New York. The village is located on the shores of Long Island Sound and had a population of close to 18,000 when Stephen was murdered in 2007. So Stephen graduated from Mamaroneck High School in 1989 and stayed there after graduation. Stephen was passionate about baseball. It was a massive part of his life. And as far as I can tell, it had always been. He started working as an umpire in his early 20s. He umpired local Little League and Babe Ruth League games. He preferred working with the younger divisions because the older divisions could get a little more serious, a little more competitive. So Stephen primarily worked with the local Little League. He was known as a patient and fair umpire, and he was said to have received more praise from parents than all of the other umpires combined.
Yeah, he must be an extremely patient person to be a Little League umpire because some of those parents can get pretty disruptive, unruly, argumentative. So yeah, that just must speak to how patient he is as a person.
Yeah, and it sounded like all the parents liked him, so hopefully he didn't have to deal with really any of that kind of behavior from the parents. He didn't just call the games, though. He played in them, too, as part of a softball league. Now, Stephen was a father to his 12-year-old daughter, Skylar. He and Skylar's mom were no longer in a relationship. However, they maintained a friendship and successfully co-parented. Skylar spent a lot of her time with her mom, but still saw her dad frequently. And Stephen lived in a two-bedroom apartment, and Skylar had her own bedroom there. Stephen's love for his daughter was clear. He talked about her often and with great affection. And Skylar, as she's gotten older and has participated in interviews, has talked about how much she loved her dad and how great of a parent he was to her. He instilled his love for baseball in Skylar too and cheered her on from the stands while she played. Stephen was a big New York Yankees fan, as you can imagine, and a tradition he shared with Skylar was that each year he took her to their opening day game, so they would even travel for games sometimes. But outside of being an umpire and a dad, Stephen was a postal worker in Larchmont, a small village that neighbors Mamaroneck. And at the time of his murder, he had worked for USPS for 12 years. One of his coworkers, Priscilla, told the Journal News, quote, "If he ever had a bad day, you'd never know it because he was always smiling and happy. He was always in a good mood. He was the sunlight of our building. He picked up everyone else here and he loved his job. I remember a few years ago, there was a really bad storm, and Steve was one of the only carriers who insisted on going out and making deliveries," end quote. As an aside, Larchmont is a super tiny village. It's like 1.1 square miles. So I was walking around the area using Google Street View, and I was thinking, wow, if you're going to be a postal worker who delivers mail on foot like Steven, this would be a great place to do it because many of the homes are so beautiful. They have so much charm and character. So it just seems like a nice place to have this type of job, except for, I guess, when there's extreme weather, I'm sure. But he got to know a lot of the people on his route. And by all accounts, Stephen enjoyed his work. At the time of his murder, Stephen had a girlfriend he'd been seeing for 2 to 2.5 years, Tamara. Stephen and Tamara met at a softball game, and they appeared to have been in a good spot when Stephen was murdered. But before that, it was described as an on-again, off-again relationship by one of the original detectives, Detective Castrella, who worked the case. And we're going to talk about him shortly. Stephen and Tamara spent a lot of time together.
So did they live together during this on-again, off-again relationship?
No, Tamara lived with her mom in a different village, 20 or so miles from Stephen's apartment. But she spent the night at Stephen's home, typically several times per week. However, Stephen had a rule that when his daughter Skylar was staying at his home, he would not have Tamara or any past girlfriend stay overnight.
Did he have a particular reason why?
It could be that he just wanted the time when his daughter was at his house to be about her and not anyone else, but he was pretty strict about this. And you can see how that might upset Tamara or anyone he had dated in the past. I have no idea if this bothered Tamara or anyone else, though they may have been perfectly fine with it. And I keep referencing other possible girlfriends because Stephen had dated quite a few women over the years. He had a certain charm and charisma that tended to draw people in. One of Stephen's close friends was a now retired local detective, Dave Castrella, whom I just mentioned. Castrella has spoken very highly of Stephen. They had known each other for many years, dating back to when Skylar was a baby. They were clearly close, but he did say in an interview with APB Cold Case that Stephen was a bit promiscuous. And I think this is important to consider just in a murder case, right? I mean, it just means there was likely a longer than typical list of people or exes to look into during the investigation. Around a month before Stephen's murder, all four tires on his Nissan sedan were slashed. It happened while his car was parked in the lot across from his apartment where he routinely left it. Stephen went to Castrella's house to informally report this. Stephen suggested that a mutual friend of theirs, who is an employee with the Department of Public Works, might have been responsible. Not long before, that same man had shown up at Stephen's home looking to start a fight after accusing Stephen of making advances toward his girlfriend.
So was this accusation true?
Stephen denied it. He said he was not involved with this woman and Stephen hadn't engaged or escalated the situation with this man. But given the timing of that confrontation, that man seemed like a clear suspect in the tire slashing. Slashing someone's tires is maniacal. I've had an inordinate number of flat tires in my life, and tires aren't inexpensive. So not only do you have to deal with the sheer inconvenience of not having a car to drive temporarily, but you also have to pay to replace them.
Yeah, especially when you're accusing a person of doing something and you don't know for sure if it's actually true or not. You're just making the executive decision that it was true and then doing something terrible to someone's car.
Yeah, and it was a friend of his. If this guy was responsible, we don't know 100% sure. When they asked him later, he denied slashing Stephen's tires. So to this day, the police believe they know who did it, but we don't know with 100% certainty who slashed Stephen's tires. Detective Castrella advised Stephen to file a formal police report, and so he did. But interestingly, when he filed it, he noted that he had no idea who could have slashed his tires despite clearly having suspicions. So we don't know why he left that out of the report. It could be that he felt comfortable saying that to his friend, the detective, but not putting it down in an official report. Maybe he didn't want the police to go talk to this guy in the event that he wasn't the one responsible. Stephen also shared the incident with a coworker, and when that coworker asked whether he thought someone was targeting him, Stephen dismissed the notion. Another detail Stephen omitted from both his police report and his conversation with Castrella was that Tamara's car had also been damaged recently. Now, the initial reports about this really downplayed the damage to Tamara's car, saying her windows were smashed one night in an area where several cars were targeted at once. So it sounded like the slashing of Stephen's tires and the damage to Tamara's car were pure happenstance. But Detective Castrella reported in his interview with APB Cold Case that Tamara's car had been damaged on at least two occasions in two different locations. I believe once at work and once when parked near Stephen's apartment. So it seemed as though someone was hunting her car down to damage it. Damage that reportedly included pouring acid on her car, smashing the windows, and slashing the tires. The offender also left notes on Tamara's car, essentially warning her to stop dating Stephen. all of this happening just before Stephen is murdered is highly concerning. And it's hard to imagine it's not connected, or even that Stephen's incident wasn't linked to Tamara's.
So it seems like during Stephen and Tamara's intermittent relationship, he must have been seeing other people.
It was reported that, yes, he had seen other people when they had taken breaks during their relationship.
So yeah, this is pointing to one of his other girlfriends that he had at the time doing this to Tamara's car.
Yes, it very much seems like that with those notes, or any woman, I guess, he had seen in the past, maybe who wanted to be with Stephen and was upset by the fact that he was seeing someone else. But it's interesting that, so there's this damage to Tamara's car, there's damage to Stephen's car. The man Stephen thought was responsible for slashing his tires did not know Tamara. So if that man was responsible for slashing Stephen's tires, it's possible he had nothing to do with the damage to Tamara's car. He would have been driven by anger at Stephen for his perception that Stephen tried to make a move on his girlfriend. So why would he go out of his way to damage Stephen's girlfriend's car and leave notes warning her to stay away from Stephen?
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking it was the same woman who did the damage to both of their cars. An angry past or maybe even current girlfriend that knows Stephen is still seeing Tamara.
Interesting. So you think this guy that tried to start a fight with Stephen is not responsible for slashing Stephen's tires?
Yeah, may not have even done this to Stephen's car. It could have been someone else.
Yeah. It's possible. It just seems like you would think those two events are linked, right? The damage to both cars. So to think two different people were responsible is kind of hard to believe.
Right.
And you'd think that guy would be happy if he knew Stephen had a girlfriend, right? Like if he wants Stephen to stay away from his girlfriend, you would think he would be glad that he's seeing someone, not go damage Tamara's car and say, hey, stop seeing him, right? And the notes had undertones of envy, or maybe not even undertones. It may have been pretty overt. Those incidents occurred in the weeks leading up to Stephen's murder. Sunday, September 16th, 2007 was a typical evening. Stephen umpired a game, and later that night, a neighbor ran into Stephen and Tamara at a local laundromat around 8 p.m. The neighbor chatted with Stephen for a bit. Stephen mentioned some work he was planning to do on his apartment, and the neighbor said he seemed like his usual self, aside from some sneezing and congestion, which the neighbor assumed was due to either allergies or a cold. Tamara spent the night at Stephen's apartment. Stephen was off work the next day, Monday, September 17th, but Tamara was not. She worked at an orthodontist's office in Larchmont. So she headed out around 8 or 9 a.m. And Detective Castrella shared that Stephen was not feeling well that morning, according to Tamara, which aligns with what the neighbor witnessed the night before. It's possible Stephen's allergies intensified if he had allergies, or maybe he was coming down with a cold. Despite feeling under the weather, Stephen made loose plans with Tamara to have lunch during her break that day around noon. He planned to take his daughter Skylar to the Yankees game that evening, but we don't know about any other plans he may have had for the day. Throughout the morning, Tamara periodically texted and called Stephen, wanting to firm up their lunch plans, but she received no response. Tamara left work around noon and drove to Stephen's apartment, assuming they would still share lunch despite his lack of response. Once she arrived, she knocked on the door of Stephen's third floor apartment. He was on the top floor, and she could hear Stephen's TV playing inside, but he didn't come to the door.
I'm assuming she had one, but did she have a key to Stephen's apartment?
She did not, and the door was locked, so she had to ask the building superintendent to let her into Stephen's apartment. The superintendent pounded on Stephen's door and called his name before finally letting Tamara in. Once inside, they were confronted with a gruesome scene. Stephen was unresponsive on the living room floor, and Tamara immediately rushed to his side, attempting to revive him. Sadly, her attempts were unsuccessful, and when the first responders arrived, they confirmed that Stephen was already dead. Detective Castrella was one of the first to arrive at the scene, and it had to be one of the hardest days of his career to realize you've lost a friend to murder and then be one of the people tasked with investigating his murder is unimaginable. And to see Stephen's body in the aftermath with his own eyes, I can't fathom what that must have felt like for him and Tamara too. No one should ever have to witness someone they love or anyone for that matter in that condition. Afterward, I found what felt like a countless number of comments from family and friends about Stephen's murder, expressing their utter shock. According to the Journal News, Tamara said, quote, "There's so much that I don't really know what to say. I hope whoever did this gets caught. He didn't deserve this. He was a wonderful father, a wonderful brother, just wonderful," end quote. Stephen's murder shocked the community too. Crime was rare in Mamaroneck, especially violent crime. So to learn that someone many people in the community knew and liked was killed was deeply devastating. Stephen was stabbed to death with a knife, with the cause listed as multiple stab wounds. While police have not released some specific details, such as the exact number of wounds or an estimated time of death, if they have one, reporting from APB Cold Case indicated he sustained fatal injuries to his chest and back and died after what appeared to be a short struggle. There were defensive wounds on his arm and thigh, which were not fatal, but suggested he was ambushed immediately upon opening his door. Based on the location of the injuries, primarily on the left side of his body, investigators believe the attacker was likely right-handed. In a face-to-face confrontation, a right-handed attacker tends to aim toward the victim's left, so just straight out. It appeared Stephen tried to shield himself, raising his arm and leg instinctively before falling and becoming more vulnerable. Since he was found on the living room floor, it seemed like the attack started at the front door, carried on through the entryway and into the living room where it ended. Very little has been shared as far as what evidence was collected from the scene. I know there was physical evidence, though, and one detail they have revealed is that a shoe print was left behind in Stephen's blood. Specifically, it appeared to be a size 11 boot print.
So this murder was obviously committed by a man then, right?
Yeah, this was a male size 11 boot print when they were measuring it, which would be like a women's size 13. And those are both in US sizes. And for other reasons, they believe a male carried out this attack, but we'll get to that in just a moment. The police checked the shoes of everyone who had walked through that scene. So Tamara, the building super, and all of the first responders, none of their shoes match this boot print. So it's a great clue to start with, but it seems like something that's far more useful during the beginning of the investigation than it would be now, meaning whoever did this doesn't have those shoes anymore, most likely, but they would have still had them probably very early on. And if you could find that specific shoe with a suspect, then that would be really solid evidence. There was no evidence of forced entry or that anything was stolen from Stephen's apartment. So to the investigators, it seemed most likely that someone was personally motivated to kill Stephen. Additionally, investigators suspected that the timing of Stephen's murder on his day off suggested the killer was familiar with his schedule. He was off on Sundays, but because Stephen's other days off rotated, it wouldn't have been that easy to predict when he'd be home unless the person knew him well or knew someone close to him. But I was thinking if the offender knew what Stephen's car looked like, they may have simply checked the parking lot he used, seen it was there, and known he was home. But you'd also wonder, did they know Tamara's schedule? If they knew him well enough to know he had that Monday off, then chances are they also knew he had a girlfriend who stayed with him frequently. So did they know she had to work that day? And they'd have to know exactly which unit was Stephen's. And I don't know how easy it would be to get that information. But once you start looking at people who knew Stephen was off that day and exactly which apartment was his, that pool narrows down a bit, It's not to say that this person hadn't just been stalking Steven and had this information because they watched him.
So how was this apartment complex set up? Could anyone just enter and have access to all the apartments and you just needed a key to get into your apartment? Or was it like, was it gated and like a secured entry and you needed to have a key or a key fob or something to get into the actual complex?
This apartment had secured entry. You couldn't just walk up to Steven's unit from outside. It didn't seem like Steven let this person into the building since the crime scene indicated he was attacked as he opened his front door. But the locking mechanism for the main entrance was faulty. Tamara entered the building that day without a key because of this very issue. So it's possible the killer simply entered without a problem. I also thought maybe they were kind of hanging around the front door and waited for a friendly person to let them in, but no one reported holding the door open for someone that day, as far as I know. But that could be something you do without even really thinking about it. I found it interesting, though, that Steven's door to his apartment was locked. Recall Tamara had to ask the building superintendent to open it for her. We just talked about this concept in our last episode, the murder of Fiona Yu. And as far as I'm aware, Steven's keys weren't missing, but that could be holdback information if they were. Or maybe the killer just turned the lock on the knob on the way out. But I'm not clear on what the locks on Steven's doors were like and if there was more than one lock, if they were both locked, or if it was just one. All we know is that the door was locked. As far as we know, there were no witnesses who saw anyone suspicious in or around Steven's apartment that day. No one heard screams or a scuffle or saw a person walking around with blood on their clothes. But there was one witness who saw Steven that morning. This witness lived in a unit in Steven's building that overlooked the main entrance, and she happened to look outside around 9:30 a.m., a few hours before Steven was found dead, and saw Steven exit the building, headed in the direction of the parking lot where he parked his car. The investigators asked her to describe what Steven was wearing, and the description she provided matched that of what he was actually wearing when he was found. So the fact that she independently provided that is a good sign that she was not misremembering or conflating seeing him another day for the day of his murder. The witness did not see Steven return to the building, but she also wasn't keeping an eye out for him. The investigators failed to find any phone calls or texts in Steven's records that could have prompted him to leave that morning. So it remains unknown where Steven went when he exited the building. For all we know, he could have walked out to his car, grabbed something from it, and then went back to his apartment. If he made any purchases that morning, they must have been in cash because there was no mention of any credit card or bank transactions. The investigators have made it clear that there have been a lot of challenges in the investigation. There were no eyewitnesses, no useful surveillance footage at all, and just a lack of solid evidence overall. But they had people to look into, one being Tamara. She was Steven's on-again, off-again girlfriend, and she was the last person known to interact or talk with Steven.
You're saying she wasn't the last person to see Steven alive because we have that eyewitness that saw Steven exit his apartment and go back in.
Right. Well, she didn't see him come back in, but it was confirmed that she saw him exit. And that was after Tamara had already left for work and arrived at work. Rumors spread around the village in the early days that she could have been involved. And Tamara spoke out against this, saying the rumors were harmful to the investigation, distracted from the real killer, allowing that person to slip farther and farther away. Tamara was initially very cooperative with the investigation, but after several months, she took a step back and obtained legal counsel. She also refused to undergo a polygraph exam, and for some reason, that made headlines, even though the investigators weren't looking at that necessarily as suspicious behavior. We don't know what the conversations were like between the investigators and Tamara. She could have started to sense that they were suspicious of her, and that could have pushed her away. But even if that didn't happen, she's allowed to refuse a polygraph and she has the right to legal counsel. I'm kind of surprised she didn't get an attorney sooner, honestly. Plus, some of the other potential persons of interest in this case did the exact same thing. They obviously couldn't have all been involved. So just goes to show that this isn't indicative of anything. Tamara has repeatedly denied being involved in Steven's murder. It's also not really even physically possible that Tamara could have done this if we are to believe the witness who saw Steven around 9:30 a.m. Like we just talked about, this witness seems reliable. And we know Tamara was already at work at that time. So we'd have to believe that she came back to the apartment, probably around lunchtime, killed him right as he opened the front door to her, which doesn't make sense because he would have let her in anyway. And that seems like something you'd do if Steven wouldn't let you inside. Then she cleaned herself up, including changing her shoes since they didn't match the boot print left of the scene, found the building super, and then put on an act when she found him. Plus, the investigators believe that Steven's killer was most likely a male due to the violence of the attack and the shoe, the way the person overpowered him. Everything was kind of pointing toward this being a male offender. And her car was damaged extensively in the weeks leading up to Steven's homicide, and that could be connected to his murder. Logically, it does not make sense that Tamara killed Steven. Could she have asked or paid someone else to do this? Yes, but to my knowledge, there's no evidence of that, and the police don't seem to be that interested in her as a potential suspect. They did look into one of her ex-boyfriends because they had a rocky relationship and had been involved in domestic disputes where the police were called. But that relationship had ended several years before Steven's murder. And after looking into that individual, the police did not consider him a suspect or a focus of their investigation. I noticed some people thought it was suspicious how, I guess, quickly she got the building super to let her into Steven's apartment. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I don't think it's that unusual. I mean, they had lunch plans at that time where she got to his apartment. She could hear the TV playing in his apartment. She likely saw that his car was still parked. She had all the reason in the world to believe that he was home and that he wasn't responding. So that would be pretty concerning that he wasn't answering. So yeah, I don't think it's weird that she went and got the super almost immediately.
Yeah. And like you said, he wasn't responding to the knock at his door. He hadn't been responding to her texts and calls for the past couple of hours. So I would be concerned too. And the fact that he just had, I mean, weeks before, but basically just had all four of his tires slashed, there's someone who was very upset with him. So that could have been in the back of her mind too. So I really didn't see this as that suspicious.
Yeah, and coupled with her car also got damaged to it. You know, the two may not be related, but in her mind, maybe they were. And that could have caused more concern.
Yeah, I would be on edge with all this going on. And it's hard not to focus on the fact that both Steven and Tamara's cars were targeted in those weeks before Steven's murder. It seems like it would be connected. As we discussed earlier, Steven told his friend, Detective Castrella, that their mutual friend who confronted Steven about making a move on his girlfriend could have been behind the tire slashing. So Castrella was in this unique position by having that information and being involved in the investigation. It's not every day that the investigator has this kind of information. The police questioned and thoroughly investigated that man who denied slashing Steven's tires and being involved in his murder. The police failed to link him to Steven's murder. And it's very possible he had an alibi for the period in which we know Steven was killed because it was a fairly short window, a little after 9:30 to noon. So a lot of people were probably working at that time. It'd be interesting to know who they looked at who didn't have a solid alibi. And I'd also like to know exactly what time Steven stopped responding to Tamara, or maybe he just hadn't been responding at all that morning. But if we know he was alive around 9:30 a.m., then she found him around noon. Okay, what time did he cease communication with anyone? Because that could narrow down the time of death. So the seemingly promising lead turned into a dead end. The police looked into a number of ex-girlfriends of Stevens. Even though Stevens seemed to be well-liked by most of his exes, they thought it was very possible an ex of Stevens orchestrated this attack. In 2013, the Journal News reported that the investigators had identified 4 persons of interest in the case, 3 of them former girlfriends. Maybe they felt wronged by Stephen in some way. There was one woman who stood out in particular. We'll call her Jennifer. I don't know her actual name. According to Detective Castrella's interview with APB Cold Case, Stephen was reportedly previously involved in an intimate relationship with Jennifer. On one occasion, Jennifer showed up at his apartment claiming she was pregnant with Stephen's child, a confrontation that Tamara was allegedly present for. Yeah, Jennifer was later questioned by the police, but ceased communication 9 days after Stephen's murder. There are a lot of questions here. When exactly did this happen? It sounded like it was a fairly recent encounter, but also, was she actually pregnant with Stephen's child, or did she think she was and she wasn't? But I suppose if she was, then by having him murdered or murdering him, she guaranteed that their child would no longer have a biological father, which is pretty dark. And if Stephen was the father, again, I don't know if he was, and she wanted support from him, by him being out of the picture, she was guaranteed not to get that. Either way, there were certainly a few different dilemmas in Stephen's life before his murder. Something like that could have definitely upset Tamara. How could she not be bothered by that situation? They were in a relationship and someone's knocking at the door saying she's pregnant with his child. So I think both aspects of this situation have to be considered here, Jennifer's position and Tamara's. The investigators searched Jennifer's car for blood transfer and found nothing. They did that with the guy who confronted Stephen before his murder as well, but found nothing of value there either.
So do we know if Jennifer was actually pregnant and had a child and Stephen was the father?
I said earlier, I don't know if it was actually Stephen's child, but I don't actually know if she was pregnant, had a child. We don't know her identity, right? And the police have been pretty tight-lipped about this theory.
And do we know what the conversation was like with Tamara and Stephen following this encounter?
No. Tamara hasn't said much publicly at all, and I certainly don't think she would comment on this specific issue. I think it would be surprising if she did, just because she has made so few comments publicly. And when she did, it was very early on. It could be that Stephen saw this woman we're calling Jennifer during one of the off points with Tamara, and she assumed that when she found out she was pregnant, Stephen was the father. Detective Castrella has a theory, and he clarifies it's just a theory, but it's that there were 2 parties involved here, a woman who wanted this to happen to Stephen and a male who carried it out. If that's true, it could make this harder to solve if that man didn't have a connection to Stephen other than through the female. There's also the possibility that 2 people attacked Stephen and that made it easier to overpower him. That has not been ruled out. It's so disappointing that there's no surveillance footage in this case, because if there was a camera on that entrance to the building, they would be able to narrow down who entered that day and find all of those people and rule them out one by one. And unfortunately, that was not the case, but that could have made all the difference in Stephen's murder. In 2017, at the age of 22, Stephen's daughter, Skylar, began speaking publicly about her father's murder. In an interview with the Journal News, she shared memories of how wonderful her dad was and opened up about the fear that still lingers. She said the scariest part is not knowing who killed him, that the person could be near her at any moment and she wouldn't even know. That uncertainty continues to haunt her. To honor Stephen's memory, Skylar and several other family members got matching tattoos of a backward Q, a nod to a tattoo Stephen had, which was accidentally inked in reverse. Despite the passage of time, Skylar expressed hope, saying that just because 10 years had gone by didn't mean it would take another 10 years to find answers. The latest information I could find was that the investigators are focused on a few different people in this case. They haven't revealed who those people are, but they believe someone out there has valuable information about Stephen's murder that they're withholding. The case could also be solved through retesting items from the scene, although I know they have done that already in recent years, and there's been no follow-up, so it's hard to be super hopeful in that regard. In many of the early reports, people expressed their surprise that the case hadn't been solved in the first few weeks. So I'm sure it comes as a surprise that almost 18 years later, Stephen's murder is still unsolved. There is a $40,000 reward for information that directly leads to the arrest and conviction of the person responsible for Stephen's murder. If you have relevant information, please call the Village of Mamaroneck Detective Division at 914-825-8541. Thank you all so, so much for tuning in for this case, a case that I definitely think is solvable. That is all for now, but we will be back next week with a new case. Bye.
Bye.